Welcome to the Vince Del Monte Podcast Show, where each week we bring you the raw and real experiences, lessons, and timeless principles every man needs to master the 5 M's of manhood. By sharing conversations with the world's most successful people pursuing the 5 M's, you'll build muscle faster, achieve a winner's mindset, increase your money, dominate your mission, and go the distance with your marriage. My name is Vince Del Monte, entrepreneur, author, pro fitness model, and father. And I've helped tens of thousands of men transform their bodies and lives through muscle, entrepreneurship, and personal development. Thank you for spending some time with me today. Now let's begin. All right. Welcome back to the Vince Del Monte podcast. We are doing something super early, 6 a.m. my time, super late, Matty Ryder's time, all the way from Australia. We're doing a special episode right now. I can't believe we're already at the end of 2020. We're going to share with you our top 10 sales tips. Whether you're a new sales professional, whether you're phone closing for your own business, for someone else's business, we're going to just share with you guys what worked best in 2020. There was a lot of stuff that didn't work. Maybe we'll share a few things that were epic fails on the phone. And I think maybe we should share a bit of our experience. If you don't know who we are, I've been selling since I was 22 years of age, so almost 20 years. And I love phone sales. I know this is probably one of my favorite parts of the business. This past year has been a new chapter for me. For those who don't know, Matt, I'm not even sure how many guys we have now. Is it 4, 5? But
we got 3 full-time selling, and then we got, what, like 2 or 3 appointment centers, and then a couple guys in the wings waiting to get tapped in.
Yeah, that's right. So we built a little, I guess you could say, a mini sales force, and our brand really hit critical mass, I would say. It started picking up steam, obviously, around COVID. All coaching businesses did, with people coming online, but it didn't slow up. I heard a lot of friends say it did stabilize after a few months. I think we leveled out a bit in August or September, but then October, November, December, it's just we've captured a whole nother level of momentum. And I know one of the big reasons, and I think this is where I want to go today. Actually, Matt, we're going to have you tell them a bit about who you are before we get too deep into the content here, but just trust. We're going to talk a lot about the importance of trust. A lot of people are looking for these fancy sales scripts. People are looking for these magical objection handling techniques, and you need all that. You need to be very skilled at selling on the phone. You can't get on the phone unprepared, but at the root of an effective call is there's already a high degree of trust. Absolutely. And so Matty, before we dive in, hey, for those just jumping on here, we're going to run through the top 10 lessons, our top 10 sales lessons from 2020. Matt, share a bit about who you are, how we started working together this past year.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm Matt, and I run a sales agency called Sales Sniper. And yeah, we met, when was it, May? I think we met for the first time.
Yeah, we were shopping for our sales team. I think, it was 8 May, yeah.
Yeah, and then, I was the only one that closed you. So that's how that goes. True. So yeah, so we provide like an outsourced sales agency, but we're very different than that. We're not like, we end up becoming, we try and become like pseudo business partners with the people that we work with and grow together. Expand. I don't want to have 50 clients with one rep. I want to have 8 clients with 10 reps. That's like how I want to run the business. And we provide a lot of like consulting type services for the clients that we work with, because it doesn't work unless we all grow together. And when you find people whose values you align with, you need to try and hold on and like cement that relationship. Yeah. So sorry, my wife's just trying to hop by, so I'm going to move over a little bit.
Fantastic.
It's Facebook Live. You want to say hello?
Merry Christmas. Hey, how are you? Hey, nice to finally meet you. Awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. And we really try and solidify the relationships that we have with our clients and make sure that we can grow together and put people in and just really help grow the brand, because especially in like the coaching space, as someone who's been in the back end of a lot of coaching business, like there's not that many that I would consider to be of like top caliber quality. And like your program is one of them. And so we're all about ethics and all about selling good things. And so when we find something that we're happy with and that we think can provide a great service to the people that we work for, then we try and go all in. And I think that you do the same. So that's why it's resonated so well.
Yeah, it was surprising when you told me you guys were having a hard time finding clients you could really get behind at the level you wanted to really support. Why is this? I was so shocked by, I'm like, isn't everybody putting out a good product?
I think everyone thinks they are. I don't think anyone goes out there maliciously trying to put out a bad product. I'm sure there are some that do, but you find out pretty quick, because when you sell the right way, you become the trusted advisor of the prospect. So the first time there's a problem, the sales guy knows about it. So we know a lot about, especially like the onboarding and the initial, say, 8 weeks of a business. Like, we get a lot of information, which hopefully is received with, oh, hey, that's awesome, we can now fix that. Because there's always going to be problems, especially when you start onboarding for a day. Like, yeah, what we've been doing, there's always going to be things that need to be ironed out. And that's where I think one of the lessons that we wrote down was the sales team, the marketing team, and the delivery team all working together and being on the same page. Because a lot of the time what I find in businesses is like, it's the sales team versus the marketing team. Sales team is complaining about bad leads. The marketing team is saying they have the greatest leads on the planet, and then the sales team is weak. And then the delivery team is complaining the salespeople are selling the wrong avatars. It's just a big giant cluster. And so I think, like, in this business in particular, everyone's on the same page. Everyone wants to, A, deliver a phenomenal product, and two, get as many people into it in the right way and only sell people who hit the criteria, which I think is a big distinction.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. There's been a lot of back and forth. The fact that I knew you guys were like, I made a good decision when you initiated a call with our sales team, your sales team, sorry, and our marketing team, to have them communicate once per week in terms of what's showing up on the ads, what's showing up, so that, sorry, this, your sales guys wanted to communicate to our marketing team what they were hearing as objections, so we could manage that stuff on the front end and all of our marketing. Next thing you know, you just get more and more qualified people. So that conversation was essential. So, hey, why don't we just dive in? We want to dive into our top 10 lessons from 2020. My first one, and this is something we try and teach our students to just, we really double down on, it's to sell one offer. I think two maximum. Yeah. But you got to have one way into your world. And when you have a second, third, fourth, fifth offer, you've got those mental crutches, those backup options. You need to come in with a position of power that, hey, this is the best program you can invest in, and it's this or nothing. And we will help you figure out the money to get into the program, but we're not going to give you like six different options on the phone. I see a lot of people, they hurt their brands by, there's like, you got a 30-day program, there's a 6-month program, there's a 12-month program, there's a 7-day feeler program. Like, it's one freaking program, guys, one program.
I think it does no one any favors, because that's the one thing you need to buy is clarity. And by offering, I think a core offer and then one other offer is fine. But I think the moment you start to introduce like drop sales specifically, drop sales do no one any favors, because the moment the sales guy gets resistance, they're automatically going to drop. That's just what human beings are going to do. And then the drop sale program is really rarely designed to be as good as the normal one, which is why it's a drop sale. So then people aren't really getting the full experience anyway. And there's rarely a good upsell channel in the drop sale. And so unless it's been really well thought through, all it's going to do is liquidate marketing. And I'd rather just have a sales team that sells the core offer better than having a drop sale. And I think you came to me and was like, oh, should we do a drop sale? I was like, no, drop sales are a bad idea. They don't work. All they do is liquidate marketing, and then everyone ends up, the moment we get one or two objections, they just drop to it. Yeah. So I think it seems like a good idea, but then in practice, you end up really probably halving the amount of main sales that you would have made. Yeah.
I think it's short-sighted too. I'd rather have somebody say, okay, I can't afford it, but I'm going to work my way up to it. It's like, hey, you go test drive that car. I say, oh man, I can't afford this Bentley, but you know what? Give me 6 months. I'll be back. Save this car for me. As opposed to the guy saying, all right, we can get you into this right now. You want to just make a deal happen? I'm like, no, I want this car. I came in for this car. I'm here for the Bentley here, GT, Super Sports. This is the car I want. I'll figure out the money. Just give me a bit of time. Then you maintain the relationship. You maintain the trust. It's just a better experience.
And I think then also as well, like, you end up at the integrity that not sign that person, the amount of like social clout you get from that, I think, like from that person, because I've done that before. I've got, hey man, you're probably just not right for it right now, but what we can do is work together. I'll send you an email. I'll give some steps that you can take, and then you end up getting like a referral off that person, and the person signs in 6 months anyway. So
I love it. All right, let's dive into number two here. I've got the second one here is number two top sales lesson from 2020 was the fortune is in the follow-up. And I just love to hear you speak to that, because I know our guys just do a tremendous job just maintaining relationships. I think we're very aware that, hey, listen, we're not going to say if you can't buy today, you're going to sell, and let's never do it now or never. You definitely need to have urgency and know when to lean on somebody, but I believe in relationship. And
yeah, 100%. And I think like one of the things that salespeople and people who are doing sales, so whether you're doing your own sales or whatever it is, you need to let go of the fact that like you can say to people on the phone that they're at the end of this, they're going to make a decision, but that's not true. You can't make someone do something, especially when there's a little red button on their phone that just says hang up. That's a pretty easy out. This isn't in-person sales where where you get the offer, you get to stare people down. So I think the more you let go of that and realize that like the goal of you as a salesperson or a coach is someone in that having that conversation is to get the person to act within their own best interest. And if right now that's buying, that's awesome. But if right now it's not, that's cool too. What can I do? If we both agree that this will be in your best interest at some stage, what can I do to support you through the transition of being able to make like the jump? And I think the best person for that is Will. Will is a phenomenal follow-up based salesperson.
Yeah.
There are one cold killers, and then there's people who are like relationship sales.
Yeah.
The guys who create such a strong pipeline that after 2 or 3 months in a program, they just go sale, sale. And I think, man, what was it like the last day of the week last month?
Mm-hmm.
I think we did 50K in the one day, like cash collected, 50K cash collected in one day. And I think it was like 9 sales that day, which is crazy. Yeah. And a lot of those just came from the fact that they'd been farmed and followed up, and they were like, they were nurtured through a sequence that made sense. Yeah. Not everyone, you don't have to do one cold closing. Like you can, obviously it's advantageous to be able to do that, but you need to be able to nurture people through relationships, because it's not always the right time to buy.
Yeah, no, I like that. People are either ready or they're not ready. This is an investment they're making into themselves. So, and I think we need to protect protect the credibility of the program. So if someone's not ready, that's fine. Like when you're ready, come back. So maybe you're just collecting some information today. We got to also just feel out, like, has somebody been in this, you know, collecting information phase for 9 months, for 2 years? Those are the people you need to lean on and who will say, thank you for pushing me, because I've just been afraid to make the leap. But then there's people at the early stages of collecting information, and they're looking at other coaching programs. And I want an educated person coming into my program. I'd rather you go on 7 sales calls, talk to every business coach, and then join our program, or not join our program, because I want you to be fully educated and all in. I told the guys, I said, we don't want clients. We want success stories. We need to protect our reputation, so we want success stories. So the slower we can go with the sales process, the less issues we have when they come on board, because they're the right person. So,
yeah, I think there's a big one where we don't want to create transactional clients. We want to create relationship clients. And the smash and grab style of sales creates a lot of transactional clients. And I think especially in the PT industry, especially in the industry that you're in, there's a lot of that around, because there are so many coaches like in that space. And most of them really lean on that smash and grab style, which is, I think, why a lot of guys have been in 2, 3, or 4, or 5 different programs before they find the right one.
Yeah. Let's talk about number three, have an irresistible program. At the end of the day, you have to have a good product. And our product looks a lot different than it did 3 years ago. 3 years ago, it was 3 mastermind events and 1 coaching call a month with me. Now we've got Brandon, Tim, Alex, Corby. We have 4 dedicated coaches. We have 6 group calls through the week. We're now launching our Slack small groups for accountability. We're We've revamped our entire members area into levels. It's streamlined from start here, go here. Man, what else? We have our mastermind event. So the product's getting better and better. And I would say the product gets better when it becomes more streamlined, more clear, and there's more support. So there's three things that make a great product. There's a program, so there's actually something to follow. Then there's support. There's a group, so we got the community, the Facebook group, all of our calls. And then there's help. What happens if I need specific help? And then there's a way to get the one-on-one help as well. So those three elements are the things that I just look at. How can we make those three simple things better? Program, support, and help.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that from a sales perspective just makes it so much easier because we're not really selling like deliverables, but the more, in my opinion, from a purist front-end sales standpoint, like the deliverables don't make a huge amount of difference, but what they do in the background is the sales guys hear good experiences from people that they've sold. And ethical salespeople, which I think that we try and be quite ethical in how we sell people, which is we have a very low refund rate, we have a very low pullout, and that's because we sell people the right way. And I think the reason why they're able to do that so consistently is because like they believe in the product. Like Will used to sell a different fitness coaching program, and he came to me saying, I can't sell that one anymore because Vince's is better and cheaper. So I was like, okay, I'll take you off it. He just couldn't do it. He was like, I can't do it. Like, I can't sell these dudes into something that I know there's something better, but obviously I'm not going to sell somebody else's leads. So I was like, all right, I'll take it. There was like the moment he said, I was like, all right, cool. You're done. That's cool. That's easy.
Just that makes sense. Will's a good man. We love Will. Will's the best.
Yeah, Will's a good dude.
And where the heck did Road come from? He came in. I was like, who's this guy? Super quiet calls. Where did you find him? He is amazing.
It's a funny story. Road came to me and said he'd never done, he used to work at, I think it was T-Mobile, in like selling cell phones and stuff like that. And I was like, hey, I really like your stuff. I saw a few interviews with you. I just want to learn. I was like, hey man, it's going to be like a low paying shitty job for a while. If you're cool, I'll take you. You need to start at like cold caller appointment center, and then I'll develop you into a savage. And he goes, okay. And 6 months, it took him 6 months to take his first sales call. So I had trained him for 6 months. We did one-on-one. We did group. He showed up to every single session. He did triages, follow-ups. He studied under Will and Marco. And then we unleashed him. And he just is an absolute savage. He is so good at what he does.
Now, I wanted to, because my next point is actually about Road, something I learned from Road. When we say savage, you guys are probably thinking not what we're thinking. Savage, you're thinking like this guy has got deflects every line. He's got an instant objection. Nothing phases him. He's actually the opposite. He is extremely soft-spoken.
Yeah, very neutral, very soft. He's
very neutral, super just monotone, like quiet, but not hypey, not up and down. And when I asked him, like, dude, what are you doing, man? When like financial objection comes up, and this is our point number four here. He says, we work together to solve the problem together. And I was like, what a great approach to objection handling. And that's our point number four. When it gets to the point in a call where any financial objection comes up, spousal objection, I need to think about it, objection. He just said, like, he gets the commitment, but he just explained, we just figure out a solution together. And that part takes typically the most time. I don't know if you guys have a term for that, but I'm like, okay, so that's your process. I'm like, your process is just to solve problem. I make their problem my problem. And I just get creative when we just try and figure out, is there a possible way? I literally align with them and figure out, hey, how can we do this together? See. So it's no more about closing them. It's just problem solving.
Yeah. So the way that we do it is we get a lot of commitment on the call and with the cost of an action. And then when it comes down to objection handling, what I always try and teach the guys is if you're objection handling, then you're essentially in a boxing match. And somebody has to lose a boxing match. But that's not productive. Whereas if you get on the same side of the table, like that's the key. So it's, hey, if you did have the money, would this be the answer for you? Okay, would you mind telling me why? Okay. So what are some ways that we can work together to where you can find the funding so you can learn the skills to make that $30,000 a month so you can provide XYZ for your family? And then we start working together and we start thinking about what are some things that we can do. Now, if they go into, if all that makes sense and they still don't want to move forward, then we know we're dealing with a more of a fear-based objection, of which we have visualized like we have like a way of making them visualize different ways of thinking. And then that's a way to create like a lasting change. And so you're totally right. Like, you need to help people. And I think a lot of people don't give prospects enough credit. For everyone thinks everything is a mindset issue. But if you like, not having money is a temporary thing. Like right. having your partner not be on board is a temporary issue. Like they're all temporary issues. And so all we need to do is get in principle commitments. And then like with the commitment to change, the buying is a byproduct of that. And so all we have to do is get someone to commit to being the person who takes the actions, which gets the outcomes. That's it.
Yeah. So I like that a lot. Really simple. So let's move on to number. So let's recap what we've covered so far. So provide one offer. Fortune is in the follow-up. Irresistible offer. Problem solve their objections together. I like that, getting on the same side of the table. I really like that. That's a great visual. And then number five, halfway there, you taught me this one. Your entire marketing campaign is designed around disqualifying people. And the sales process is designed to sell them. Yeah. Let's just unpack that. I love the idea of like your entire marketing campaign should be designed around saying things like, this is likely not for you. From the God's honest truth, like this probably is not for you. Entrepreneurship is lonely. It's hard. No one gets you. It's going to cost you more money, more time, more effort than you can imagine. This likely is not for you. But if you've already committed to building a successful and profitable online fitness business and you're just looking for speed, relationships, knowledge, accountability, yeah, then it might make sense to set up a call and, you know, see if we can maybe help you. But I've just disqualified the people that are looking for a red shiny object, or as Corby says, a magic wand. If we had a magic wand, I'd be selling magic wands all day.
Exactly. Drive a Lambo and selling magic wands, yeah.
But so you talk about like the process, like just the importance of disqualifying. The marketing team has the job of disqualifying people, and the sales team has the job of...
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. And so I think a lot of people have it backwards, because a lot of people take a lot, especially in the coaching industry, people take hyper authoritative, you will do as you're told, like, this is how it's going to be, sales frames, which in my opinion are only designed to make the salespeople and the coaches feel better about themselves. Because like I've said, I stopped pretending that I could control the outcomes of sales calls, and I have a very high close rate. So I feel like I can close almost anybody. But at the end of the day, that person has made an like autonomous decision to move forward. The words that I've said have influence, but they have not made the decision. And so my wife is a very intelligent woman, as your wife, and I cannot change her mind. But I can have her come around to my side of the table and agree with me. At the end of the day, like, it's her call. And so by setting these authoritative frames and going, we're going to disqualify you through the sales process, it ends up being disingenuous, because it's like having a fast action discount. Hey, if you act today, it's this much. If I bought tomorrow, would it be the same price? Yeah, then it's not really real. So why are we doing kabuki theater? It doesn't make any sense. Whereas if you come in genuinely saying, this is what it's going to be, and then we allow our salespeople to qualify people through, because we want to get as many of the right people through as possible. And the sales team wants that, the delivery team wants that, the marketing team wants that. So why don't we do the disqualification on the front end and the qualification on the back end instead of the other way around? It makes the salespeople more happy. We don't have to pretend that Rode is an authority within the fitness space, which he's not, neither is Will. So then your business becomes more scalable, because if you're selling, if Vince is on the phone, you can be as authoritative as you want because you're the guy. Right. I'm not the guy. So I can't sell it like I am the guy, and Rode can't sell it. And Bill came in out of nowhere and just cleaned up. And that's because we've set him up to be like, you don't have to be an authority. You don't have to be the guy. You just have to get them to commit to change. That's all you need to do. And the people who are on the phones are people who have gone, you know what? Yes, I am interested in this. And I know that it's not going to be a quick fix. It's not going to be a magic wand. It's not going to be all this kind of stuff. So we have confidence that the people that we are selling are the right people.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, one of my lines in one of the pre-call videos is me saying, it's not my team's job to sell you. That's my job. That's my job. It's my job to sell you. If you don't believe in who I am and what I've done and how we can help you and that this can also work for you, then you shouldn't be here. My team is going to get on the phone and help you make the right decision for you, but they're not trained to enroll people that are not ready. Again, because we have to protect the group from people that aren't going to take massive action. So that really also creates a better, maybe less pressure for them, and to be more of a supportive, play more of a supportive role in just their journey. And hey, we're just here to answer your questions. And then, yeah, sift out. Obviously, you got to sift out when people have fear-based objections that just need to make a leap because their cost of inaction is so high that it's not helping them waiting any longer. And those are the people that always say, thank you for finally pushing me. I've been thinking about this for way too long. So let's move on to number six. One thing I learned from you guys as well, all of our students have learned, for those who don't know, Sales Sniper does monthly trainings for our members. There was a phase where you guys were doing calls every week. Our members' sales exploded, and members are doing great work on their phone calls, and they're approaching them with confidence. One of the things that you guys really taught us, I'd love to hear all your language around this, but be extremely curious. And I love that whole, just be very curious. And the term that you used, which I've stolen and I love, is to use non-assumptive language, which when you don't use non-assumptive language, you increase sales resistance because you start making assumptions that like, oh yeah, we could totally help you. Oh yeah, we could definitely crush it. Oh yeah, this is going to be a big year for you. I can get away with some of that because of who I am and my authority in that. But when I say it, it's like Vince believes in me. He probably doesn't say this to everybody because he's got to protect his reputation, and he doesn't need to say this to everybody. And when, you know, we taught this to everybody, this was a game changer. So just speak to the importance of non-hypey sales language, non-assumptive sales language, and, you know, just essentially being very curious about what do you mean by that? And you guys got all the great lines.
Yeah. So I think like with the non-assumptive language, the thing is perspective is so different. I can show you this card and we're looking at the same card, but we're seeing two different things. So we can be describing the same card in very different ways because it's got two sides. And so, and you know, a really easy way for trainers to think about it is if you've been training for 25 years and you talk about strength and getting strong, and then you have a prospect who's never trained and they say, I want to get strong. And if you start then asking questions and going down the line of questioning based off your perception of strong, there's absolutely no correlation between those two things. One might be a triple body weight deadlift, and one might be just being able to walk upstairs without getting puffed, which isn't even strength. And so you have to be like, okay, so when you say strong, what do you mean? And you got to get them to define terms, and then you use their success metrics, not your own.
Yeah,
I like that. You know, yeah. And so that's just a really easy way to do it. And then it's just not assuming you can help them because you don't know. So it's just basically don't lie or, hey, yeah, I can definitely help you with that. And it's 2 minutes into a call. It's, do you know that? Because they might have an extraordinarily rare bone disease that you don't know about. You can't do anything. There's so many things we have to, I always assume that I don't know anything. And if I assume that, then I ask a question because, yeah, I really love to lose weight. Okay, what do you mean lose weight? Do you mean 50 pounds or 5 pounds? Can you tell me a little bit about that? Oh, yeah. And then you start to be genuinely curious about what they're saying. And just by clarifying, it makes everything so much easier because then you can never be wrong. And not being wrong in a sales call is key because every time you are wrong, it's that little bit of sales resistance. And there's nothing worse than people say, like I said, or people know that you're listening to them. And people know that you're listening, they know that you're really absorbing the information. And then that's how you can become that trusted advisor.
Man, I love that a lot. That's really good. So Maddie, you got the next one. We're on number seven here. What'd you have for number seven?
I wrote it to you. And
avatar specific frameworks are key. What's an avatar specific framework?
Yes, this is very sales specific, but it's good. So if you like get a breakdown, your avatar is not a demographic. An avatar is, it's a problem. So let's say we're selling personal trainers into fitness coaching, right? So we have a coach. So a coaching avatar. And then we might break that down into people who are looking to start a business online. Potentially even people who are like working for a big box gym who aren't technically like entrepreneurs yet. That might be one avatar. And then we have the people who are current entrepreneurs who are either online or looking to go online who've been running businesses for a while. They're two distinct problems. And they're two distinct mindsets. One is an entrepreneurial growth mindset. The other is transitioning from employee to business owner.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're very different problems. So we need to have avatar distinct frameworks. And so what I mean by that is if I'm selling any type of coach or salesperson or anyone who helps somebody take action, I use what I call a congruency framework. So if you want to be congruent in help, if you want to consistently and predictably get others to take action, you must take action on your own problems. If you're not sleeping well, you need to go, what can I do to get better at sleep? If you're overweight and you're a business coach, you need to go, okay, how do I lose weight? I need to start fixing this. If you want to help people lose weight and you're not acting and you're not happy with your current level of income, you need to be acting on that. Because there was a guy the other day who I was sold into a program, and he goes, yeah, I just really want to wait until after Christmas. And I said, yeah, that makes total sense. Let me ask you a question. Do you plan on making any sales in between now and Christmas? He goes, yeah, of course. And I said, how can you overcome somebody's Christmas objection if you can't overcome your own? And he was like, crap. I was like, so that's what I call like a congruency frame. It's you have to do in yourself what you expect others to do.
Yeah.
And that's what I would consider like a framework. And a framework in the sales is like establishing a known sort of element that you can then hang the rest of the call off. And then everything goes back to that. But it really helps people visualize things and go, okay, if we both agree on this, then the rest of the conversation can flow quite easily because we're talking the same language. And so I think that's why creating, really thinking about the people that you're selling and the avatars that you have and the problems that they have and the things that they would consider to be like truths and how you can use that to help them make a transition. Because right now they don't make great decisions around the thing that you're talking about. And if they did, then they wouldn't need your help. So their baseline instinct, lizard brain decision-making process around what you sell is not going to be good. So you have to make it make sense for them.
I love that. Yeah. The consistency and congruency framework is one of my favorites. So you sell the same way that you buy, you sell from your own wallet, all those, that's like, cause it's so truthful, man. Oh man. It's like,
so true.
It's right there, like the full frontal mirror. You're looking right back at the reality. It's a before photo right there. This is the photo. This, you're like, I'm in better shape than this. No, this is actually exactly what you look like right now. So you're like, do you see how this is showing up right now on the call? This is showing up right now. And like, you're giving them an opportunity to become a better version of themselves there. And I think for most people, that's very valuable. Hey, that's what makes people feel good about the enrollment process too. They've made a step towards the better version of themselves, and now they have confidence to address that objection that's been showing up for them for who knows how long. So I really love that. All right, Maddie, number 8. This is for anybody who's building a team. I think they're going to really enjoy this one. Incentivizing sales staff to win. It'd be really cool to hear how we've structured things. These guys are doing really well.
They're making a lot of money.
Yeah, really well. And for me, one thing that I've learned to work with you too on, Matt, is last year I had a sales girl, and basically I felt she was really underperforming. So I went out and I enrolled literally myself like 25 people in 1 month. It was in the month of November after I went to the $100 million mastermind. I'm like, this isn't going at the pace. And then a few days later, she quit. And I'm like, I knew it. She wasn't cut out for the job. And I started to think back because I always try to take full ownership and responsibility. And I didn't hand off any of those sales to her. That would have been like, wow, my boss is truly supportive of me being successful in this organization. And I said, I'm never going to make that mistake again. And I've heard this a lot, even from some of our team members, like, oh, I'm paying my sales team so much money. I'm like, yeah, but they're writing their own paycheck. Needs that I'm doing all the pre-selling. So I think just let's speak like the sales team needs to be incentivized, but speak to the business owner first, who's got these scarcity and survival mindsets still in place to hold on to a couple sales. Like that's because different situations will come up through the sales process where you have to figure out who gets the credit. And there has to be like a big long-term vision for both parties being successful. So speak to what a team like you and I have to, how we need to be functioning and thinking for it to work.
First of all, you've got to have individual and team goals. Because if everything's based on the individual, then it just starts to become a shark environment. It's just sharks eating, trying to steal food. Whereas if they know that, one, if two people handle it and they can just split comms, that's super easy. And then the second of all is, okay, if someone's crushing it, but then the other people are still supporting, then everyone's going to get fed because those bonuses, because one person's having a killer month. They start to work as a team, and then we start to celebrate as a team. And there's a couple of things that I do, which I think stop scarcity within a salesperson's mind, which is all of my team has access to a $5,000 credit, like a $5,000 like line of credit. And so at any stage, if they need $5,000, they can get that from me. Now that gets taken off from their next commissions. What that does is it stops scarcity. So the dudes are never in that kind of scarcity mindset, which I think is super helpful. And then also we set incentive structures based off that, things that make sense for the business. So we have a set commission. Now, with a lot of the ways that we do it, as you know, is we essentially charge our own commission, which is something that I think people should look at doing, which is having that sort of, for lack of a better term, like a joining fee, or that sort of setup fee, which really is, because setting up a client is a nightmare. I mean, it's a lot of administration. It's very heavy lifting, plus the cost of the marketing. So I think subsidizing some of the commissions with like more of an upfront payment is good. And then giving them cash collection bonuses, I think, is the best way to do it, because they're masters of their own destiny. They can call up clients and collect. They can farm that. They can do paid in fulls. And so that's a really good way. But I think as well, like, you should never be unhappy with how much you pay salespeople as a business owner, especially if you've negotiated the deal. I've had people come to me and go, oh, I think we need to lower the commissions. And I was like, oh, because we're doing a good job, you're paying us too much money. I go, okay, so is that how most work works? Like, when you do a really good job, you get a pay cut? Is that what we're talking about? I go, because if it is, we're not having that conversation. Like, I can just go have a different conversation with somebody else. Like, you
don't get on the phone with Matt Ryder, guys, if you're not ready.
Like, it doesn't work that way. You do a good job. If your client's really successful, and they got value out of what you did, and they said, hey, listen, I'm doing really well because of you, but I just think that I'm going to pay you less money. What would you do? You go, well, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm doing a good job. So if your sales guy should, like, if you have a top sales performer, they should probably be close to the highest paid person in the company. But that's because they're the one writing all the checks, and they're the ones bringing all the cash in. And it's finding good, highly motivated, ethical, and reliable salespeople is extraordinarily difficult. You can find lone wolves that will just come in for a little while, but those guys get bored super easily. So you really need to treat your salespeople as assets within the company. And if you have good ones, figure out ways to make them stay. That's what I would say. And that's what I've done. I've done my best to try and create an environment where everybody works together as a team, and a culture that's so strong that people just want to be there for more than just monetary reasons.
Matt, how do you work with, maybe just random question here, if somebody's in a funk, a sales funk, what are some of your ways of getting your guys back on track? I think we had one of our guys, we don't have to share who, personal relationships. Sometimes somebody's personal relationship is up, sometimes it's down. That's going to affect before. And I remember our very first call, you started telling me about the mindset of a true phone closer, and like, they have to be singularly focused. Like, these guys, the only thing they talk is sales. They don't, you know, we don't ask them for input on our program. We don't ask them for input on our, it's just all, they have one job. And if there's even the girlfriend said one wrong thing to them that day, that can throw off their sales for 3-4 weeks. And you have to be there to help them get back on track. So a lot of people listening to you know, the podcast here, they're doing their own sales. So they get in a fight with their wife or significant other. They go 2 or 3 sales without a deal. Like, how do you help someone get out of a funk?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I think prevention is better than the cure, but I'll just go into both. First of all, like, you need to set yourself up so that you try and detach yourself from the outcomes of the calls, which is very difficult, but it is an important step. And it really is. And I think the better you get at selling and the more confident you get in your process. If I don't sell someone these days, I don't care, because I know 8 out of 10 times my process works. So as long as I keep doing my process, it'll work. And if that guy didn't sell, and I can end that call and go, you know what, that was a really good call, and I'd be happy for someone to listen to that, then it's good to go. So having a really good process helps, and it really mitigates, because now, I don't know if you've noticed, like, there's very few downtimes now. Everyone's pretty much consistent because everyone's so dialed into the process. That does take a while. to fix it, the worst thing you can do is pull calls. That's the worst thing. So if someone starts like having a slump, never reduce their diary. It's a terrible idea. All it will do is prolong like what happens and make it go on forever. Because if you think it might take 30 calls to get out of a funk, you can make those 30 calls last a week, or you can make those 30 calls last 30 weeks. It's not going to change anything. The next thing is that you need to remember that salespeople are not commodities, like they're human beings. So you need to go to them, and it's almost always going to be an emotional problem. And so you go to them and you say, hey, how can I support you? I don't expect you to be a robot. I don't expect you to crush deals every single day of your life. But I like, if there's something going on, like I'd like to be able to help you. I like to be able to help you through it. And what can I do to support you? For one of my guys, I bought him a holiday. Two weeks, all expenses paid to Bali. And he was in Canada. And so I just said, as long as you can keep working, and COVID happened and didn't end up going. So I ended up getting a watch or something like that. But it was like somebody showing that kind of faith in them and saying, hey dude, like you're more to me than just a dude who can make sales. So I value you and I want you to be happy and I want you to be successful and I want you to make sales, not because it makes me money, but because it makes you successful. And when you're successful, I'm successful. And so let's work on this together. And then we just talk it out. And we're having that culture of openness and where people can come to you. And also having data tracking good enough to where you can see the slumps coming. And what we just brought in as the next level is we brought in this coach to track everyone's getting Aura rings. And then we're tracking everyone's sleep. And then he's tracking a bunch of other metrics. James Kant, you remember James Kant? Yep. James Kant's going to be coaching every single guy that we have. And then he's going to be tracking all their sleep and all their recovery metrics to see that when we can start to predict slumps.
Got it. So, yeah, that's a good book for your guys. Boundless, Ben Greenfield's book, Brain Performance, Jim Quick's book. What the heck's it called? Somebody put it in the chat. Jim Quick's new book's outstanding too for brain performance. But yeah, you know, all your guys need to be on training programs. They all need to be dialed into very specific routines, habits. This is a performance-based job. So your saws needs to be getting sharper every single day.
So you got to treat them like athletes. If somebody has a bad game, you don't yell at them about how bad their swing was. You work with them on their swing. That's
it. They know why they're here. I really like that, what you said. Hey, I don't expect you to crush deals all day long. It's, I get it. And that can only come from somebody who's done the role themselves. Cause I'm like, it's like, I don't crush every deal. Sometimes I'm like completely blow it. I'm like, are you kidding me? Did that just happen? I can't tell you how many people like, I'm like, this guy's going to enroll. This is going to be an amazing client. I was like telling people they're part of the program before they even enrolled. And then they're like, just leave it with me. We'll get back to you. Never heard from him again. I'm like, man, what?
That's a trap right there though.
All right. So let's move on to, I think we just got a couple more here. So we talked about incentivizing sales staff to win. And then next, number 9, sales, marketing, and delivery need to communicate and be on the same team. So we touched on that. Maybe what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So I think it is super important because again, I'm in a lot of these businesses and it really is like the ones that scale, the ones that grow quickly and don't have massive teething problems are ones where the business owner, one, is not married to the idea that their leads are amazing. That's a real problem. You need to, but also the sales team can't just be saying the leads are crap. Like you have to have known elements. Like with Will and Road in your business, like it's so easy because there's such known elements that we know if something's happening, like it's a lead issue, it's not a sales issue. You know what I mean? Or there's something that's happened, something's changed so we can find it. And so a lot of people just haven't had the experience with sales guys that are such known entities that it's like we can actually take their data as like real data. So if you don't have that, then you can put things in like triage calls and all that kind of stuff to get some more unemotional data-driven decision-making going. But yeah, the marketing team and the sales team need to talk. The sales team should be sheltered from everything that isn't purely positive, like that from a delivery standpoint. So the sales team and the delivery team should talk, but only about high fives and unicorns. And the marketing team and the delivery team need to talk about the quality of client coming through because the sales team is just going to sell people. You know what I mean? Like essentially, there needs to be like that level of communication and it needs to be somewhat compartmentalized in a way that the salespeople are protected because if you never have salespeople do rescue calls, Never have salespeople do anything that you haven't paid them to do or they haven't voluntarily done.
Yeah, like, Matt, you made that so clear before we started.
Yeah, it's just, it never, because what can happen with salespeople are generally very agreeable on in nature. That's why they're easily sold, salespeople. And so you need to, they can be taken advantage of. And a 10-minute task becomes 5 10-minute tasks becomes, and then you end up becoming a job. And then the salesperson winds up resenting you because they're doing 10 hours a week of something they're not being paid for, which only takes away from the hours they can be selling. So not only are they losing, like they're losing double money. They're not getting paid for the 10 hours and they're losing 10 hours that they could be selling. So you have to be very careful what you ask your sales staff to do. And everyone needs to be on the same page and be working together and looking to solve problems and not point fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. The guys are awesome. Mondays, they come prepared with their questions. When we do our team call from 11:30 to 12, they'll always want to get clarity on, hey, did something change in the offer? Or we're always just over communicating, over reporting. Those two mantras have been really helpful. And they've been extremely helpful in knowing when to push a promo, when to say, hey guys, no, we don't want to exhaust. We've already, they give so much feedback on what's happening on the sales side of things that I go to them to make the decisions. I'm like, hey, do you think we should run this for an extra 4 days? No, it's good. We've got as many people as possible through, maybe tweak a different angle, but definitely don't do that one again. And I'm like, wow, I was about to say, go do that again. So they've taken ownership of a lot of the bigger decisions as well. That's just a side note. Last one. Oh, your
the last one I was going to say is make sure that you align with people whose values are like work together. I've worked with business owners who were good people who I liked, and there just wasn't something. And I think that you've got to, and I ended those relationships and ended all well. And there were people who I just got a bad vibe off. And I think I've been in business long enough now, and I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I don't need more business. It's appreciated, but I don't need it. And so I think like really having a, this is who I want to work with. This is the type of person I want to work with. And like you, Finch, for example, like we get along very well. We're very similar people. We have similar value chains. Like I could sit there and have dinner with you and it'd be cool. If you don't want to have dinner with somebody, don't go into business with them.
That's good. Yeah. You, me, Jeremy, who else? Eli, we got to get together somehow in 2021.
Yeah, it's going to happen. We'll figure it out.
Let's do some quick rapid fire. Matt, when's somebody ready to come to you? Because a lot of our team, let's just talk a bit about, for our consultants, coaches listening, our fitness coaches listening who are doing sales, how long, when should they bring on their first sales guy?
That's a really good question. Coming to me is different because I would say not to be done. Pretty decent coin. You have to be in the 7 figures for us to consider it. But I think when you bring in a sales guy, like you got to decide where you're going to zig or zag. So you're either going to be the guy that's the face that is the like the delivery guy, or you're going to be the sales guy. That's step one. So whatever one you enjoy more, do that one. You can find people to do a lot of your delivery as long as you have the systems and everything in place. It's the same as getting someone to do your sales. If you are getting someone to do your sales for you, you need to have cash reserves because there is going to be a pretty significant drop of income for at least 3 months, I would say. Just generally speaking, it's going to take you a little bit of time to find the right person. So definitely don't just give someone your sales because you hate doing sales, even if you're doing okay at it. Have a graduated process where you can hand over and hand over 10%, 20%, 30%. And then think about how you pay the person. And because, for example, I'll go, okay, they'll go, what kind of KPIs do you guarantee? And I go, what lead flow do you guarantee? And they go, oh, well, I don't guarantee lead flow. Then I'm like, how can I guarantee a KPI? And I was like, and what happens if you don't hit the leads? Will you pay me a base? They go, no. And I go, then, like, it's a two-way street. You have to be able to look at someone in the eye and go.
I told you guys, don't get on the phone with this guy.
Yeah, like for me to take on an account, this is how I look at it. And this is how you should look at it when you're bringing in a salesperson. I have to be able to go to that salesperson and go, this is a good move for you and your family. This is going to enrich your life. You're going to be happy doing it. And you're going to make the money that you need to make to provide for your family what you want to provide. And that's the responsibility that I take on. So when you bring on a sales guy, like you better have your stuff in one sock. Because otherwise, like you're doing everyone a tremendous disservice. Because that's that person's livelihood. And so take it seriously and be there to support them through that process and have them do your triage or something, but don't have them do a, 26-week unpaid internship where they're just doing free labor for you and stuff like that. But I think once you're ready to take on somebody as if they were an employee and take the responsibility and potentially pay them to do some training and pay them to do some appointment setting and shadow your calls and really take it seriously, then you're probably ready to take a salesperson. But if you're just looking for someone to offload work who can work for comms only and sell your crappy leads, like, that's not that good job for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good, Matt. There's been so much stuff. What are we looking forward to in 2021, Maddie? We had a pretty awesome year. We're actually having our meeting this morning, our Q1 planning meeting with the entire company from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. today. We're going to set some goals, some targets for Q1. How important is having targets and how do you get 2021 started off to a great start? And we can wrap it up here.
I think having goals and having everyone on the same page, and obviously the goals need to be well thought out and realistic. There's nothing worse than when you go to planning meetings and you're like, well, that can't happen. You're like, the business owner is going, we're going to crush it. We're going to triple in. All right. So I think really good thought out goals and that have delivery in mind. Like, how many people can we help per month? Okay. We know we can take on X amount of people. Okay. So if we know we can safely take on 60 people a month, how many sales to make, how many this, how many this, how many this. And so work it back from that and really keep the focus on the real quality of work. Like, how does that never drop off? And then from there, set targets, be aggressive, but be realistic. And then have something that happens at the end of the target. You know, if we want to sign up 200 people by the end of Q1, which is definitely doable, it's like, okay, what happens then? What happens? We all going to buy gold Rolexes together? what are we going to do? So there has to be some sort of light in the tunnel. And then I think one thing as well is when you do have a giant week, the one phrase you should never utter to your sales staff is, okay, that's now the new normal.
Okay.
Never say that to your sales staff because it's not the new normal. Because for I sold, I think, 11 24K packages in 1 week once, right?
You sold 11 24K packages in 1 week?
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. In 5 days from Monday to Friday. And he was like, yeah, that's the new normal. And I was like, no, it's not, man. It was a culmination of 3 months of follow-up and a whole bunch of good leads and everything just landed on 1 week. Huh. I was like, it's not anything that I did. I was like, this is not a replicatable feat. It was just it was a combination of a series of different factors. And my next week was just a normal week. And I was like, I expected that. But I'm a fairly mature salesperson, so when I get told that, but when younger salespeople are less experienced, they hear that and they go, oh, crap, now I've got to do 10 sales every week. And they start to freak out, and then they start to do things, and they start to push in ways, and then they start to think of the end of the month or the end of the week as like, I have to close these people now so I hit that target. It's all silly. Let's make the most amount of sales over the longest period of time and make sure that we just go, hey, that was awesome, big high five.
I love that. Hey, what's one of your top sales books? What books are you reading? A lot of our guys are going to ask us any book recommendations for Q1.
Man, I think the one I'm reading at the moment is Mastering the Complex Sale, which is a high level B2B sale. So selling Merck pharmaceuticals and stuff like that. So that's a really interesting book. I think it really depends on where you are. I would say probably the best bang for buck book that you can get in sales would be Socratic Selling.
So how do you say it?
Socratic Selling, Socrates. Yeah, so Socratic Selling. I can't remember who wrote it on the top of my head, but that's a phenomenal book. That it's very similar to the Jeremy Miner style question-based selling instead of the more consultative-based selling.
Okay, I got it. Socratic Selling by Kevin Daly.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you. Well, I haven't even heard of that one. That's amazing. All right, cool. What's our biggest opportunity? Two more questions. What's our biggest opportunity in 2021 and what's our biggest bottleneck?
Oh, that's interesting. I think the biggest bottleneck, it's more people.
On the delivery side or sales side?
I think both. I think delivery and sales. I think that as the sales team dials more in, it's going to need more people to more coaches.
Yeah,
finding good coaches is difficult and you don't want to rush the process. So there might have to be a time where we intentionally stagnate the growth.
Yeah.
Just attach the delivery team up, which is fine.
That's the number one conversation we're having right now. How do you maintain high touch without high tech? Like when a company grows, the number one fear of, even if I'm a part of a coaching program, the group's getting bigger and bigger. So when I was a part of Empire, and this would be really good for my listeners to listen to, because I've been on the other side of this. When I joined the Empire Mastermind with Craig and Bedros, the first group, it was just 10 guys. There's an NFL Super Bowl champion, a Mr. Olympian. There was a couple eight-figure earners. There's just 10 guys in the room. I was like, this is awesome. There's just 10 of us. And then every event, it got bigger and bigger. So I was like, this, I could still get access to the coaches just as much as at the start. But I think what starts to happen is a group grows, people can get fearful of losing the high touch. And then a lot of, I've seen the mistake a lot of people make is that they try to automate the high touch. You can't automate high touch. You can't automate human touch. So no. A part of our conversations today is one of the things we're doing is small groups. And we actually just negotiated with Slack because we have over 200 members and Slack's not cheap to get set up with. We're going to have probably 5 to 10 person groups, all based on certain income levels, relationships they already have in the group, where they want to go income wise. And they're all going to have small groups. So we're actually going to create a whole nother level of peer accountability that hasn't been there. And this is actually something that's been birthed out of the growth, which I never would have thought of. We never really needed. I think maybe what's inside, I think just as you grow, you can't lose touch of the connection with the students. That's the number one thing I've heard from even people who are in coaching programs. When the group grows, people get scared that, oh, am I going to miss out on? Am I not going to get what I originally was promised? No. In fact, you're going to get more. It's going to be even better because we're aware of what made us who we are in the first place. It's yeah, but we also have to be okay with, hey, maybe we should put the brakes on for a few weeks before we hit gas again.
Yeah, it's just you got to be willing to have a conversation. Like I've told a few of my clients, okay, bro, we need to pump the brakes because we're going to break your business. Like you need to catch up. And a lot of the time they go, no, don't worry about it. I'll figure it out. And I go, you sure? Because I'm going to keep doing what I'm told. Like I'm a big boy, I've been around for a while. We need to pump the brakes. We should pump the brakes. Like I'm the sales guy telling you to slow down, but. Huh. You do you, yeah. And then the business breaks, and okay, yeah. What do you want me to do now?
Yeah, no, these are very important conversations to have, and this is why, you know, Matt and I communicate on all this stuff, and we have to communicate even more in 2021. So I think that's it, everybody. Matt, any final words? I know you're crushing it on your social media. You're putting out so much great value. I'd love to have you share with our listeners. How can people get plugged into all your amazing sales material?
Yeah, you whisper my name near a smartphone, you'll see me. No, so I'm on YouTube. If you just check out Matt Ryder, I'm on YouTube. I do 2 weekly videos. We have a podcast called Coffee is for Closers, which is doing really well. We just hit 20,000 downloads. It's like 30 episodes in. And yeah, you can look me up on Facebook. It's Matt Ryder. I've got him and just Matt Ryder or Sales Sniper or Closing Code. You'll find out.
Awesome. Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to the Vince Del Monte podcast. First of all, Matt, Merry Christmas, brother.
You too, dude.
We will see you in the new year. It was an epic year. Super, super grateful for you, man. I truly am super grateful for our relationship. You're an incredible guy. You and your team, you guys are angels. You guys really are.
You guys are all angels. You just keep getting us good leads and keep servicing them well so we don't get complaints. And man,
yeah, you guys are the best.
There's not many of you out there, let's put it that way.
You guys are the best. Thank you so much. And hey, listen, share this episode of the Vince Del Monte podcast. Take a screenshot of it and share it with another fitness coach, another fitness expert, another personal trainer, somebody who's ready to level up their sales. One of my favorite sayings is sales cures all. You don't have a budget problem. You've got a sales problem. Commit to getting better at sales and all your problems will magically disappear. Yeah. Take a screenshot of this, share this. That's the only thing we ask. And you guys all have a great day, positive day, productive day, profitable day. And we'll see you all next time. Ciao, ciao.